Author's Note on Carbon. New Year's Day 1950 was a Sunday, and by and large, as the clocks ticked and chimed and boomed their way into the first year of the century's fifth decade, the world seemed to have settled into a fairly stable place, with memories of the Second World War starting to fade and scant suggestion of any of the turmoil soon to come. The Japanese, still busily repairing their country and still occupied by American forces, had some small reason for good cheer that day, with the ending of their custom of declaring children to be 1 year old at birth and of everyone adding a year to his or her age each January the 1st. This change meant that all 80 million Japanese would not become numerically older on this day. A 40-year-old would wait until his next actual birthday before becoming 41. For a brief while that morning, all Japanese were said to have suddenly felt younger. There was smaller cheer for New Yorkers. The canned music that had flooded the concourse of Grand Central Terminal for the previous 3 months and that had whipped silence-loving commuters into a mutinous fury was turned off, and forever. Riders on the New York Central regained their sanity. The calm of the everyday hubbub was resumed. For a while, some relieved New Yorkers were said to feel suddenly younger too. And in England, a teapot lid maker named Elizabeth Hume and a man from Lancashire named James Jackson, whose job was listed as mule spinner, said to be a textile-related occupation, were each given awards for the contributions they had made to these crafts in a ceremony at Buckingham Palace. In Britain, nothing else of great significance occurred, according to the day's newspaper accounts. Beyond, in the outside world, most of the men of note then charged with running the world could count on remaining sometime yet in power. Truman, Attlee, Stalin, Adenauer, Franco, Tito, Peron, even comparative newcomers such as Kim Il-sung and Mao Zedong, were all for now lying easy in their beds. There were similarly complacent kings and queens and princes in abundance, from Egypt to Tonga and Kathmandu, together with an emperor in Japan, a shah in Persia, and a grand duchess in Luxembourg, mostly respected, occasionally revered, and all, for now, reigning in comparative comfort. Yet there were shifts in the wind. The grandest of the world's monarchies was still England.